Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. This is episode 526. I'm your co-host, Steve K9 Kim, and joining me as always from up north, the beautiful city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, we have a bushel and a bevy of boxing to talk about for up to next 2 hours.
You know, I could just talk about Chavez Jr. getting knocked down and beaten and stopped for the first time for those 2 hours, but you're right. We do have a lot of other stuff to get to. Let's get to it. I'm excited.
This show is brought to you by the Iron Gym, located at 14548 Ventura Boulevard, Sherman Oaks. The number for the Iron Gym is 818-322-4627. Once again, the Iron Gym at 818-322-4627. Folks, if you want to send in a question or a comment or a critique via Twitter, you can do so at Gabriel_Montoya or at SteveUCNLine. And again, we have phone lines open in about 15 to 20 minutes. Jump on board. Give us your thoughts on the Sweet Science, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. And again, it's the new extended version of the next round. We'll go at least 90 and up to 2 hours, depending on your participation. But let's get started with round number one. It was HBO split-site doubleheader. First from My Verona in New York from the Turning Stone Casino. Junior welterweight in action. Lucas Matisse wins a hard-fought and well-deserved majority decision over Ruslan Provodnikov in a fight that, for the most part, lived up to the billing. Your scores, 114-114, and two judges had it for the Machine of Buenos Aires, 115-113. Kicking off this broadcast from Arlington, Texas, junior welterweight debut of Terrence Crawford, who shines by stopping Tomas Delorme in six. Gabe, it wasn't quite Corrales Castillo, so it wasn't a 10 out of 10. But I'll say this. I think this fight was a solid 8 out of 10. And you know what? That's still pretty damn good.
It was a real solid meat and potatoes fight, classic clash of styles. Not a lot of ebbs in action. I mean, you had one guy or the other pressing it. I'm really impressed with Matisse. It's what I expected him to do coming into the fight, was to try to box and just win 3 minutes at a time and get out of harm's way. And there were times where that jab would go away and Ruslan would try to capitalize, get to his body, land some giant shots. And I could see the fight as a draw. I felt that Matisse edged it. The biggest difference was that active jab. I mean, he would throw three or four jabs, and then, you know, throw a combination off of that, spin out of the way. I noticed you'd mentioned that Matisse talked about this in the post-fight, that he'd looked at Chris Algieri and how he had beaten Ruslan Provodnikov, some of the things he used, and you could tell that parts of that game plan were in his game plan. It was a disciplined, all-around, solid performance for Matisse, arguably his best win.
Gabe, from ringside, and I had front row, press row seats, I had it 6-6, 114, 114, but I got the sense the right guy got the decision. Because if you put a gun to my head, Steve, who did more of what they wanted to do? Who controlled more of the action? Who deserved the fight on the Steve Kim diebreaker? I think it was Matisse. I think Matisse's footwork, I thought, was key. And it's the one fatal flaw of Ruslan Provodnikov, that he has heavy hands. But, Gabe, the only thing heavier than his hands are his ponderous feet, and he has to be planted and set to really throw his shots, and then the reset takes too long. And Matisse did a great job of hitting on the fly, as the great late Don Familton once taught me about, that he could be mobile and still be powerful and strong, get in and get out. But I'll say one thing about Ruslan Provodnikov. When you beat him or get a decision, you absolutely earn it, because this is about as physical a fight, I think, as the Lucas Matisse has ever been in. But I think with Ruslan Provodnikov, the other flaw is a pacing that – if there were 15-round fights, he might very well be undefeated. However, they're 12-round fights, and that's the reality. And he's going to have to start to be a little quicker off the gate, a little bit quicker off the trigger. And he wasn't as busy on the inside as I expected. I thought there were times he was laying right on Matisse's chest, and Matisse would either beat him to the punch or just grab him and neutralize any of the things he did. I thought Provodnikov should have been digging more left hooks and uppercuts right down the middle. But I do think, again, and you mentioned this, Matisse's mobility and his versatility was this fight. And from the Danny Garcia fight, it's interesting. Are we seeing a reinvented machine that he isn't just the guy that has to bang someone out? Because from my recollection, Gabe, I believe this is the first fight he's won without sending his opponent to the canvas.
I believe you're correct. Yeah, and it's the first fight where he's acted like a boxer and he's gotten away with the decision. I think he's shown parts of this before. I mean, he showed it against Devin Alexander, and he showed it to an extent with Zab Judah. I think for early on, though, his identity was that of a pure power puncher, Lucas Matisse. And I think now he's finding more nuances to his game as he's gone up. He's got one of the nicer resumes in terms of his experience. The more styles he's been exposed to, the more wrinkles we've seen. And I think in this fight, it was just incumbent on him. He could not get into that kind of a war and have it last, in his favor. Provodnikov seemed to me to be the harder puncher. He seemed to hurt Matisse. I thought several times in the fight, Matisse looked a little stunned and was able to hide it. Towards the end, I think it was the 11th round, he ate a left hook that made his legs buckle. But it was a little bit too little too late for Provodnikov. I think Provodnikov, yeah, he's got those slow feet. But I think a great entry point for him would be to use the jab. And that way he could kind of, find a place that he could hammer his way in and get those combinations going. As it was, he would kind of maybe throw one jab, get in close, and then hope to wing to the body. He just didn't let his hands go enough, didn't let them go in the places that he needed to be. He just waited too long a lot of times. And I think, for him, sometimes a bad thing is knocking a guy down early. I think the cut actually kind of worked in Provodnikov's favor a bit, and that you could see the intensity right away ramp up. He started going right at Matisse, upping the pace. And that was the thing I was wondering about, was could Lucas Matisse keep that pace up? And, boy, he sure did. I mean, the jab, it was just constantly working, footwork constantly turning, getting out of the way. It was masterful stuff from both sides, though. I mean, it was, like you said, it was a solid 8. In terms of, one out of 10 being best. Just a great, great fight. Wonderful fight to watch.
Under Freddie Roach, I do believe Provodnikov is improved. There's no doubt about it. He's a world-class 140 who is a difficult out for anybody. But, Gabe, just like Freddie made that small adjustment in bringing that right hook to the repertoire of one Manny Pacquiao, who for many years was a one-arm bandit and a one-trick pony, I think with Provodnikov, there's still work to be done in terms of rounding out his offensive arsenal and getting him to be able to be more effective and more consistent leading with the jab, because there's too many times comes in a little bit naked and Matisse was able to sharpshoot that right hand consistently, especially in the early half before he damaged his right hand. And leading off this broadcast from Arlington, Texas, was Terrence Crawford. And Gabe, again, Thomas Delorme, we know he's flawed. He's been dented before. He's not Marvin Hagler. He's not Aaron Pryor. We know that. But I tell you what, if you look at the way this kid's skill set is developing and how he's evolving as a boxer-puncher, I think this is one of the most impressive young fighters in the sport today. He's well-rounded and he's gifted, and you know what? He's also entertaining, which I think is key. I think Crawford, it's going to take one hell of a fighter on a very, very good night to overcome and topple Mount Crawford.
I really like watching him fight, and I was watching the fight and wondering, is he, now that he's moved up in weight, is he going to still have that explosiveness? Is he going to want to risk a little bit? What's he going to be like? And we got in about round 4 or 5, and I was like, if he turns into just a guaranteed 12-round decision at 140, I'm not sure how excited this is going to be. And then he just explodes in the 6th. And it was like he was looking for what he, looking for that opening, looking for a place for that right hand. And then he just started landing and he couldn't miss. Just to get a guy out of there that fast. I mean, like you said, Delorme is not Captain Rugged. He's not Marvin Hagler. But at the same time, he's a quality fighter. And it was a nip and tuck bout to that point. He was doing things that made Crawford kind of adjust, kind of kept him honest. But once he saw an opening and was able, and realized he could get the guy out of there, he closed like a champ. I mean, the finishing skills were just superb. I don't know what the ceiling is for this guy, and I think that's a great thing for him. We need to see him in with more styles, more tests, bigger guys, and just keep pushing this guy, because just something tells me there's a lot beneath the surface with Terrence Crawford.
You figured that the size of Delorme, who really should be fighting at 147, has actually fought there before, would trouble Crawford early, and it did. But this is the impressive thing about Crawford. He pokes and he prods and he searches and he investigates, and then he dissects. And once he does that, Yuri Gamboa found out after early success, Delorme found out, and he absolutely exploded. And Gabe, we talked about this last week, the fact that when he goes to weigh-ins now, he doesn't have to wrap himself like a baked potato and turn up the heater up in his room. I think he has more of his ass underneath him, and he might actually be a better athlete. A more complete athlete that doesn't have to suck himself dry like a sponge in the middle of the desert. Terrence Crawford, he is a guy that's skilled, but he also has the ability and maybe the understanding that he does have to entertain, and he's an attraction. I think Terrence Crawford has a very big future. If he was stock, he would be like mid-90s Apple. I'm all in on Terrence Crawford, and I'd like to see where this story develops. Gabe, moving on to round number two from the StubHub Center, where it was raining Corona on one Julio Cesar Chavez as Andres Bonfara absolutely bullies Junior over nine rounds before he says no moss on the stool in what is a shameful quit job. Ooh. And the junior welterweight opener, Amir Aman, the young master, clear-cut 10-round decision over the game, Walter Castillo. Gabe, I said it on various platforms. I never liked this fight for Junior. Number one, long layoff. Number two, Andres Bonfara had no problems making the weight, and he was the naturally younger guy, the more natural 175-pounder. And you pointed this out. Bonfara's gotten better technically, and I think from a confidence standpoint, this is not the same guy that lost to Derek Finley back in 2008. And for finally, it has finally come out as a fact, the great Julio Cesar Chavez was Top Rank's matchmakers.
Yeah, I read that article today, your interview with Bob Arum. And, yeah, I mean, I think it said it all. You know, Bob can be pretty brutal when the relationship's over. But I thought he made some great observations. One, he pointed out that, you know, it took him 8-9 years to build something out of Chavez Jr. And, you know, I'll go on record. I've said on multiple platforms, I never thought much of Chavez Jr. I thought he was a kid, like you say, you know, born on third, thought he hit a triple. And he just didn't have that desire. He didn't have that want to. And that just doesn't do anything for me. I think it's why Mexican fans really like Canelo and were really quick to jump off the junior bandwagon as soon as the Pink Chonies came out. But I think, you know, what was really telling was that, you know, it took 8-9 years for Bob Arum and his matchmakers to build that product, out of the second generation, and one night for Al Heyman to ruin it. We've said it for a long time that Al has no idea what he's doing when it comes to matchmaking. He's either matches his guys incredibly light or way too hard. This is one of those cases.
The three greatest jobs of matchmaking and protecting that Top Rank have ever done, in no particular order, the three that stand out and be on my Mount Rushmore, and I don't think of a fourth, would be Butterbean, Mia St. John, and Chavez Jr. And maybe that's a bit harsh, but here's the issue. He had every conceivable advantage for about 45 fights, and I thought it was very telling that even as they played the shenanigans for the first time against Brian Vera, who's really kind of a journeyman, tough guy, junior middleweight, he struggled mightily to beat him at 173 or 172, whatever that farcical weight was, back in September of 2013. I think the Chavez brand is forever toxic. I mean, first of all, they had to give away seats to Cal State Dominguez students and faculty, and that's not a joke. The cold calls from the AEG StubHub Center. Now, this is a funny story. I met people from California that actually went to Provodnikov Matisse in Verona, and I actually went back on the plane with them. They showed me their ticket stubs, and I saw them at the fight. They were told and called by the AEG. Now, this is a funny story. And one guy, Israel, who was nice enough to help me actually get out of the airport yesterday, said it was funny, Steve. The AEG spokesperson or lady said, "Are you interested in going to the fight?" And he said, "No, I'm not." And they said, why not? And said, well, I'm going to a better fight in Verona, New York. And the response from the lady on the phone was, geez, you're about the eighth person to tell me you're going to that fight. To me, that's telling. And for Mexicans to waste beer, ooh, that's telling. That lets you know right then they are permanently off the bandwagon, Gabe.
Yeah, I mean, they're all about hard work. I mean, being a Mexican, I think that's a big part of our identity is working really hard. I come from first generation. My mom came over, worked for the phone company, got naturalized. We're all about working hard, kind of going beyond our means, you know, or beyond our station in life, working for everything that we've got. And Chavez Jr. is kind of the opposite of that. He's lucky enough to be born Julio Jr. He could have been Omar. Could be talking about the other guy if he'd have been named Julio. He just didn't seem to appreciate what he had. He always treated victory like a foregone conclusion, which, you know, certain fighters have that mindset. Floyd has that mindset. But, you know, sometimes he wouldn't win, and then he'd get the decision. And I just don't think that sat well with Mexican fans. And then he's missing weight. And what he did with Brian Vera, who, you know, he's not like a deity among Mexican fans, but he's a hardworking boxer, and we can appreciate that. Chavez Jr. kind of spit in everybody's eye the way he treated his station in the game and what he was given, which any one of us would kill to have. But I think the backlash is sometimes boxing fans can be too fickle. I don't think that's the case here.
You know, in the past I've compared Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. to Tommy Boy, played famously by Chris Farley. But then someone pointed out to me very adroitly on Twitter that Tommy Boy actually had some redeeming qualities, and at the end he was actually saved from himself. That's not the case here, but he truly is boxing's trust fund baby, and it got exposed for what it's worth. And J.S. Writing tweets in, so Bob Arum kind of admitted he was selling us a sack of crap when he previously told us how great Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. was. Yeah, basically. But today, Bob Arum was not lying. Gabe, real quickly on Amir Emman. Not saying this fight is possible, not even saying that this fight would be appealing. Amir Emman, though, in my opinion, has the skill set, the length, and the athleticism. He'd be the type of guy I think that would really give a guy like Terrence Crawford some problems at 140. This is a very skilled technician here.
Yeah, there's no doubt. That would be a nip and tuck, a tough fight that – I think, you know, an intangible like power, you know, and you know, who could take whose power, who's got the better chin, that probably would decide that kind of fight. And you know, who's going to be stronger in the clinches. The guy's got the whole thing, you know. I just think the universe problem is the issue here. You know, would he be able to fight Terrence Crawford? You know, it's getting to a point where it's almost like you don't want to waste your imagination on fights that can't happen. But I think this is the kind of guy that I would love to see Terrence Crawford face. Anybody at 140, I would like to see him face. What are the chances of like Crawford getting a shot at like a Mauricio Herrera? Is he too entrenched in the Al Haymon universe for that fight to happen?
You know what?
I think that would be interesting.
You know what? I want to see a guy dominate Mauricio Herrera. If you said, Steve, that's his next fight in Omaha, I'd say thumbs up. I'd like to see it. I might even travel down again because that's on my personal bucket list as one of the favorite places to watch boxing. Mauricio Herrera, in my opinion, beat Danny Garcia. He beat Benavidez. And it was pointed out, if he doesn't get the shaft from the judges last year, he might be the fighter of the year. So if that's the fight they want to do, no objections here. Now, as for Amir Emman, I believe he's promoted by Don King, so I don't know exactly on what side of the fence he can roam, but we'll find out very soon. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We are here for at least 90, could be all the way up to 2 hours, and later on we'll talk about the heavyweight championship of the world. No, it's not Deontay Wilder, no matter what those PBC commercials say. From the famed Madison Square Garden, let's go through a couple of tweets here, Gabe. Here's one from Tyrone Johnson, our good friend back east. Am I crazy for thinking Crawford could soon be the best fighter in the world, Gabe?
You're not crazy. You're just a little premature. You know, I think we really need to see him face guys that, you know, Delorme had been beaten before. You know, I want to see him face somebody that is his size and also, you know, undefeated. You know, I think Gamboa fight, that was you know, probably good matchmaking. I'd like to see when you start throwing out terms like great. Greatness is defined by defying the odds, not always winning when the odds are in your favor. I think he's a really good fighter, but I want to see more. I want to see him get punched by somebody that he doesn't want to get punched by, and it keeps getting punched by, and then has to figure out a way for that to stop happening. You know, I want to see him in tougher fights, facing bigger puzzles. But I think he's on his way. I think that was my question heading into Saturday. It was like, is this going to be the next guy? Like after May 2nd, when we realized just how old both those guys are, and you know, Floyd's looking to retire, probably his fight after that. Looks like he's kept his money. Manny, probably maybe a couple more fights and he's done. Who is that guy? I think Terrence Crawford is in a really perfect position to be that next guy.
You know, if Crawford can beat the likes of Herrera and then add a name like either Matisse and or Provodnikov within due time, let's say 6 to 12 months, he'd be well on his way to, I don't want to call it greatness, but certainly being one of the iconic fighters of the current age. He would basically take the mantle from where Andre Ward was before he decided to short-circuit his own career. Here's one from Chris Jones. You guys think HBO would consider making good with Al now that he pays for time, or is it F Al forever? Gabe, in my opinion, right now it's F Al for now and see where this goes.
In business, you never say never. You know, I think it's like you say, yeah, it's F you for now. But, I mean, I'm curious to see where Al, you know, where they fit into Al's universe. You know, would they show a PBC-esque broadcast? Would they let him control it? I mean, he's getting a lot of control over all the other networks. I mean, I don't know if you read that article today that was tweeted to us.
I did.
On Sports Business Daily. It gave a little more of an insight of how things are working. That was, you know, a pretty solid article. But I wonder, you know, how much control, now that it's a different regime over there, it seems like no surprise that Al isn't over at HBO anymore. So I don't know. I think he's got everything handled. I think it's just incumbent on HBO to keep raising the bar, and if they can't raise the bar, you know, if you can't beat him, maybe you do join him at some point.
Here's one from right on the button, my colleague over there at UCN Live. After this past weekend, what's the best candidate for fight of the year so far? Kovalev Pascal is mine up until now. You know what? I'd still put that number one, and I think the silver medal does go to Matisse Provodnikov, Gabe.
Yeah, that's actually a tough one. Nothing really sticks out to me just yet as fight of the year. But I think, yeah, Kovalev Pascal might edge it. Although I always felt like Matisse Provodnikov was a little more seesaw. And had a little more drama for me than I felt like Kovalev was in control of Pascal, you know, for the most part. He had a few shaky moments and not the cleanest of endings, but I just thought it was a dominant performance. I wouldn't put that in. Fight of the year is nip and tuck all the way to the end. You have no idea who's going to win. Maybe there's some knockdowns. There's a little bit of reversal and another reversal. I need something a little more dramatic. I'm one of those people that's not uncomfortable with not having anybody on my ballot until somebody earns their way onto it.
Yeah, the Kovalev Pascal in its defense had knockdowns. It did have a momentum shift, and it had a knockout ending. And sometimes those variables will tip a fight one way or the other. Here's one from the president, Andrew V. Kennedy, who made the trip to my Verona this past weekend from Jersey. He asked, what are the chances of Lucas versus Crawford? Also, what, if anything, was learned from that article on the business of the PBC? Well, Lucas versus Crawford, I get the sense Golden Boy wants to see what happens May 2nd and maybe get a crack at Manny Pacquiao. That's what Oscar De La Hoya said to the ringside press immediately after the fight. Gabe, one thing about that article on the PBC and the Wall Street Journal, it admitted to an Ali Act violation that some of the money being siphoned is basically money that Al Haymon is taking as an advisor from his fighters. So my question is this. Is it really kosher to be the promoter, network, and advisor, basically double dipping from all hands? Federal law says it isn't.
Yeah, that stuck out to me too, that part. And the writer kind of glossed over it, but it didn't make a big deal out of it. You know, it's like they have like another, you know.
Maybe he didn't know.
Yeah, maybe he didn't know. I mean, it's you just look at it and you're like, that seems to be, like they're aware of the Ali Act and that it's a hurdle that needs to be gotten around, and they're consciously doing that. That just doesn't sit well with me. And the fighters are so complicit in this. They're so happy to get the paycheck. They're so happy to turn over their career to Al Haymon and be part of this big thing and kind of give a big finger to all the doubters of this takeover. But at the same time, it's people always talk about, for the love of the game, and you got to do it for the sport. And I find those people kind of damaging the sport, because the Ali Act is put in place to protect the fighters. And when fighters band together with people that don't have that in their best interest, guess what they're doing? They're enabling it. It's sort of like people that buy $100 pay-per-views. Don't complain about how crappy the card is or the ticket situation or how Floyd abuses you. You guys have been paying for this monster and feeding it for years. I haven't been buying the pay-per-views. You guys have. So it's something to take into account.
And here's one from Mr. Blue as we wrap it up before we get to the phone lines. What's behind fighters thanking Al? Fonfara's people look scared when Fonfara didn't thank Al. Did you see that video where Fonfara's going through everybody except Al, and Leon Margulies, his quote-unquote promoter, literally was in a panic saying, thank Al. Andres, thank Al. Thank Al. Andres, please thank Al. Yeah, what's that all about? Seriously, what is that all about?
Is it in the contract? Is it? Yeah, it's very strange. It's like you got to make sure to brand the billionaire because he needs the money. I don't know what it is, but it was really weird to watch. I love getting those little peeks behind the curtain, and that was the other thing. The article talked about that. Well, you can't have the manager, the promoter be the same guy. So Al's using these smaller regional promoters to basically run his events. Are they really running his event, or are they just loaning out for a fee their promoter's license?
Of course.
And the people that right.
Gabe, they are glorified site coordinators. Nothing more, nothing less.
I don't see how they get to keep their promoter's license acting that way. There should be some sort of code of ethics or code of behavior.
Well, in boxing? Hold on. In boxing, Gabe? I don't want to go all out of Golovkin, but are you serious? You serious? Anyway, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We have at least an hour to go, maybe more. Depends on you. Gabe, let's get to the phone calls.
All right. In this 787, are you serious? You're live on the next round. 787?
Ooh, this is not a good start. And I believe that's a Puerto Rican number. Ooh, geez, not good.
860, you're live on the next round.
How you guys doing tonight, CT?
CTR Ricky Henderson, what's going on?
The only fight that I got to catch was the Matisse-Prelnikov, but I will say that I think Prelnikov is always going to have trouble with a guy who has a good jab. He's taking some hard, hard shots. I think he's the best fighter that I've seen take Matisse shots. I've never seen he looks stunned maybe for like a couple of seconds, but for the most part, he needs to develop a jab like you guys are saying, and he needs to cut off the ring a little bit better. He kind of just followed Matisse around, and at times he could have took full advantage of Matisse because, he caught Matisse a couple of times, but he couldn't take advantage of it as much as he should have. But I think it was a good win for Matisse. He did what he had to do, and he faced a little bit of adversity. So I'm definitely looking forward to see who Matisse fights next. I didn't get a chance to see the other fights, but I can get a little touch on Crawford. I picked him to win, but he opened up my eyes when I heard he won by a knockout. I'm definitely looking forward to see who he fights next because he's so versatile in the ring. It almost seems like he can do whatever he wants with any type of style. But I agree with you, Gabe. To see who, get him in there with a fighter who's going to test him a little bit more, hit him with some hard shots, see how he dealt with a little bit more adversity as he did with Gamboa. As far as, can I talk about the heavyweight fight this weekend? Or?
Yes, please do.
I'm picking Klitschko by a knockout. I think, Jennings has some athletic ability, but I don't think his style is going to be troublesome to Klitschko. He keeps a high guard, but Jennings sometimes, I don't know, his jab is okay, but I don't see his style giving Klitschko any trouble. I see a knockout by Vladimir in probably like the seventh round.
I think it's going to be an early knockout. The problem I have with Jennings, two things. Number one, the inactivity. Since June of 2013, he's only fought twice, and this is a very underdeveloped heavyweight who didn't walk into the gym at age 25. So I think seasoning and experience is a problem. Now, from a technical standpoint, CT, you talked about the high guard. The problem with that high guard is he leaves himself very flat and parallel, both shoulders, to his opponent. I believe him doing that, this is the worst guy to do that to against is Klitschko, because a telephone pole jab and that ramrod right hand that comes right down the middle. I just don't see him being a real counter puncher with that style. He's very much a catch and counter guy. Mm-hmm. Don't think you can do that with a guy with the size, power, and the length of Dr. Steelhammer.
Now he's going to get his shield all dented. Perfectly said, Steve. He puts that high guard up. He just makes himself a giant target. He just kind of waits. And with a guy like Dr. Steelhammer, who's just looking to see if you're going to have any incoming that he needs to worry about, one, I don't think he's going to be worrying about Bryant's power whatsoever. I think he could afford to make more mistakes in this fight, Klitschko. But I think, two, he's just going to beat his arms down. And by the time Bryant wants to get anything going, it's not going to have as much snap on his punches. His wrists are going to be all busted up. His forearms are going to be all pounded in from having that high guard and just waiting and waiting. I've never seen anybody get to this position and then just kind of squander the opportunity by not fighting, not seasoning yourself, not really preparing for battle. How do you not fight since last July?
I still have images. I think Bowie Topu actually knocking down Jennings. I do worry about his versatility, and I also worry about his durability, and those two things trouble me. And Klitschko, say what you want. He's not always exciting, but he's been among the most dominant fighters in his weight class this past 10 years. CT, we got to run, okay?
All right, thank you.
347-215-7598. We have news and notes later on at the top of the hour. Again, we can go 90 minutes all the way up to 2 hours on the next round. Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. Gabe, who's next?
In the 818, you're live on the next round. 818.
Hey, Steve, Gabe, what's going on, guys? How's it going?
Good.
What's up?
Good. Not much. Just want to talk about the I'm one of the few people who chose to DVR the Provodnikov and Tise fight and take my discounted tickets over to the StubHub Center, and I'm glad I did, you know. Chavez nice. Finally got exposed. Not exposed, but, I mean, finally, the shoe was finally on the other foot. You know, he finally got picked on as a smaller guy in there, got taken advantage of. And, I mean, it was amazing. It was crazy to see how quickly that crowd flipped on him. When he was walking into the ring, the crowd was cheering and everything for him. And, I mean, just like that, it was pretty crazy to see how they flipped on him.
You know what? He is now Julio Cesar or Humpty Dumpty, because he's fallen off the wall. He's broken into a million pieces. And all of Hal Heyman's people, I don't think, can put this back together again. Because he said the most like delusional thing when he said he's too big, but I want a rematch at 170. My God, how many catchweights do you want, man?
He thought he was winning. I was winning until, you know, he beat my ass and knocked me down and stopped me. But other than that, I thought I was doing great. Let me ask you this: when you're at the suburb, how loud was it? Because I know the cable will turn down the crowd, and when they started chanting and yelling and throwing beers, it seemed like they couldn't quite turn down the volume enough and still be able to get him in on the interview. How bad was it there?
Oh, man, it was pretty bad. You know, they were throwing and booing and throwing stuff in the ring. I mean, they were chanting puto, puto, you know, and calling him a quitter and everything. And, I mean, it was just,
wow.
You couldn't even make out what they were saying. I mean, he was getting booed. He got beers thrown him all the way back to the locker rooms. It was crazy to see.
You know, I tell you one thing, guys. If I'm paying $12 for a Corona or Tecate, last thing I'm doing is throwing it.
Right.
But that's the emotion that was elicited. I mean, listen, what I found interesting in watching that fight last night when I got home was he's getting his gloves taken off by Joe Goosen, who in many respects, you know, staked a part of his reputation on the fact, I can rebuild this. And as Chavez is trying to explain to him, hey, this is what's going on, Joe had to look like, Chavez, please. He did not want to listen to it. Bottom line.
Yeah, it's like, you do realize I was Diego Corrales' trainer.
Rafael Ruelas, Michael Nunn, guys like that, you know?
Yeah. you know, my guys usually go through adversity. That's why I, yeah, shut up, kid. It's just ugly, you know. I think, you know, it's like you said, you know, it's interesting to see the shoe on the other foot. But it's also, you know, people want to crown Al Haymon and the PBC, and they just, you know, they love that whole outfit. Well, you know, this is it. No more guys getting coddled, I guess, but also no more franchises, no more stars. In some ways, it's almost like Al allowed this deconstruction to happen. You have no more puppet guys. Well, oh, wait a minute. Danny Garcia got that decision. But I just think it's interesting that he's kind of undoing everything that Bob and all the other promoters have done over the years. I can't help but wonder if it's pointed.
And by the way, Bob and Top Rank, they did a beautiful job of speculating, because they settled this situation. I believe they walked away with at least $2 million. Because from what I'm told, as soon as the fight with Bonfara was made, if he lost, it would have really minimized everyone's value and what Top Rank could have settled for. And they made that decision, okay, they met our amount, let's walk away, this ain't our business anymore. And quite frankly, I don't know if there's a Chavez business to be had at this current moment. Hey, thanks for the call. We got to run. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
In the 585. And, you know, if you think about it, Steve, you could afford to throw that beer if you didn't pay for your ticket, which a lot of people
very good, you know, Gabe. And by the way, they also allowed the Galaxy soccer fans that if you were at the game, they actually said this, hey, stick around. Stick around, watch it on the balcony. Like, really, you don't think people actually just went down to their seats? I mean, come on. They tried to create this mirage that, hey, we can sell tickets, Chavez is still a franchise, and the fans love him. This thing was about as big a mirage as seeing like a pool of water in the Sahara Desert. That's all it was, a mirage.
Exactly. In the 585, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, it's Jake from Vermont.
Jake, now, I didn't see you this weekend. Were you there in Verona?
Yes, I was not. My girlfriend actually had her wedding shower on Saturday.
So what are the divorce proceedings?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about
it. I kid.
Well, no, I mean, I paid $75 for a ringside seat to that fight. And like,
you missed a good one, Jake.
I know. It stinks. But I was thinking, Crawford has from all the fighters available outside Haymon's universe, and it seems like he has all of them at 140 almost, except for Adrian Broner. You know, Lamont Peterson's moving up. Danny Garcia's supposedly moving up too. So you got Crawford, Matisse, Crawford, Imam possibly, Crawford, Benavidez, Crawford Herrera, exactly. There's a whole bunch. I mean, and maybe in a couple of years, you know, Crawford Verdejo or something. So there's a lot of money there for him, and they could really build him up.
They can, and remember this, he has a real promoter, and he's already a legitimate draw in Omaha. So I got to tell you, the future is very, very bright for Mr. Omaha, Bud Crawford. And I just think, to me, the thing that's great is not only is he technically sound, he has the ability to entertain with that skill set. Those two aren't always mutual, those two factors.
Yeah, and I'd also like to say, I don't think a lot of the fighters completely understand what they're doing, signing up to be like this and taking all this quick money. What they're doing, in my opinion, I mean, this is the only way this venture could possibly work, and he has a whole bunch of money from hedge funds and guys that like to squash labor costs as much as possible. They're signing up for the UFCizing of boxing and fighter pay, you know, where it's like 9 or 10% of total revenue goes to fighters. So we're going to see, like, a fighter at Danny Garcia's popularity level get $150,000 for a fight. And
Jake, I've said this for a while. The early generation of PBC fighters that were with Al Haymon during the HBO days when they basically absolutely stole from the bank and then Showtime, they'll be overpaid. But you're right. In 4 or 5 years, the goal is to have them cap their revenue, cap what they could make, and there will never be a guy that can make $5, $6, $7 million. Because under that system, you don't really create stars because, again, it's about, quote-unquote, the brand.
There will never be another Floyd Mayweather. I mean, whatever you think about him, from the business end of things, he controls more than any fighter ever, from what I understand. He gets a chunk of the tickets and everything sold in his name. There will never be another guy who can have as much power as Floyd Mayweather. Make $150 million from a fight, and the same people cheering this on so much and love Floyd for his decision so much are cheering on a situation which would end another Floyd Mayweather coming for forever.
Yeah, and by the way, Gabe, here's another issue, and I talked about this, is the sustainability of this series, or the PBC is about the fights. On May 29th, on Spike, they're giving us Amir Khan, Chris Algieri, opened up by the thriller between Paulie Malignaggi and Danny O'Connor. Okay, there you go, PBC.
That's what, one of the funniest quotes in that article was one of the executives saying, we know Al has a long track record of making quality fights that everyone wants to see. And then I look at the paper, and here it is, those two fights.
Oh, and by the way,
really?
And they asked, of all people, Ross Greenberg about that, who absolutely,
that's
under
right,
his reign, allowed Al Haymon to make some of the worst fights in HBO history. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, of all the people that I would ask to say, hey, did Al Haymon ruin HBO boxing? Ross Greenberg is probably the second worst guy to ask after Kerry Davis. Jake, we got to get running. I look forward to seeing you sometime, okay?
All right, see you, Steve.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. And, Gabe, you know what was great about this fight this past weekend in Verona, which I'm glad I didn't miss? I saw a lot of fans. I saw some from California. People came in from Texas, all up and down the eastern seaboard, a couple from, like, Pittsburgh, other Pennsylvania states or cities. People really rallied behind this event. And I will say this, my first time at the Turning Stone, that is a classy joint. That is a first-class venue. So if anyone that would ask me, Steve, would you recommend going to a fight at the Turning Stone if you have the means to get there and you don't mind flying into Syracuse? I would say abso-positively, yes.
Yeah. Oh, no question. We went up for the Hall of Fame. I didn't get to see a fight inside the venue, but we got to hang around at the hotel, hang out at the pool. We stayed at the honeymoon suite. Really nice rooms, really nice facility, man. I'd stay there anytime. I was a little bummed. Watching it on TV, I was like, yeah, maybe I should have gone to this one.
And, Gabe, here's a tweet from Richard Lizama, which is just interesting. It says, what do you think about Bud Crawford versus Mikey Garcia? Anything that would hold that up? Mikey Garcia's current career. That would hold it up, I think, Gabe.
Yeah, just a little bit.
That might be an issue.
When is he going to be fighting that?
The rumor is, because he was at the original PBC March 7th in Las Vegas, I heard he was up there, and the scuttlebutt is that he's already signed with the PBC and Al Haymon, and he's just waiting for his top-ranked contract to expire. But at this point, out of sight, out of mind. Gabe?
Yikes. What about Jesse Vargas versus Bud Crawford?
That's a solid fight. Jesse Vargas has a belt, and yes, those are important. And I want to see someone beat Jesse Vargas so definitively that they can't possibly give him the decision.
That's not possible. Let's head back to the I think you can even knock him out. And if it's in Vegas, he's probably going to get
draw.
The decision. In the 530, you're live on the next round. 530.
Good evening, guys. It's Ringside Robert. Steve, that was a hell of a fight in New York, and I'm glad that that fight was able to be made, and I think the right guy won it. But HBO kept talking during the broadcast about putting Crawford against the winner of that fight. So do you think next it will be Crawford-Matisse?
No, and I think you could still build that a little bit. And Oscar De La Hoya came over to Press Row after the fight, and he said, we want the really, really big names. And that's really code for Manny Pacquiao. So let's see what happens May 2nd. And let's see if Manny Pacquiao even wants to fight after May 2nd. I think that Lucas Matisse is worked his way towards a big fight. But in boxing, what you deserve is not always what you get. And if you're Crawford, if you have a business in Omaha, if you could do a fight with the Mauricio Herrera and still make pretty good money, maybe you wait on that fight. But certainly, if they said to me, Steve, Crawford and Matisse are headed for a collision course, would you mind that? I'd say absolutely not.
Okay, and since I wasn't here last week, I've got to ask you, what is your opinion of the whole Kovalev, Kathy Duva, Stevenson thing about her pulling out of the purse bid and not allowing this fight to happen? And here we all thought it was Stevenson not wanting this fight. Now Kovalev and Duva have to look bad, don't you think?
Oh, they do. It's a bad look. There's no doubt about it because they initiated the process back in December. But I think they miscalculated exactly how much money Al Haymon was going to be playing with in 2015. And I'll say it again, though, and this is not to excuse anybody, but HBO and Showtime and their network alliances have kept more fights from happening than those dastardly organizations. And that point is consistently lost on people. And there's a part of me that says, Kovalev and Main Event should tell HBO, let us win this title, let us put a capper on our run at 175, and come back to you as a more valuable property. But we know historically that doesn't happen because that's what kept Nonito Donaire in Top Rank from ever really taking up that offer put up by Golden Boy for a fight with Abner Morris. That's the reality of this business.
So what happens to Sergey Kovalev now? Because obviously Stevenson, now he's got the possibility of rematching Fonfora for bigger money since Fonfora disposed of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. And frankly, I hope we never see Chavez Jr. again. I mean, he was exposed. I hope he's never put on our TV again. I hope we never see him. But where does Kovalev go from here now that she's pulled this stunt?
Kovalev has to fight his IBF. And that's another issue. The WBC knew and had agreed with Main Events back several months ago that, yes, you will do your IBF mandatory. Then we get to hopefully a Stevenson-Kovalev fight. For some reason, they changed their mind. The Najib Mohammadi fight will take place, I believe, in June or July, and then we'll go from there. Now, Main Events has made it clear, though, they are still willing to do the fight at a 50-50 split, but here's the caveat, which is bothersome. It has to be on HBO. And, Gabe, that's one of the problems that I have. You can rip all you want about PBC guys only being on certain networks, but the shoe's on the other foot here, and I think the criticism still has to be there, that why does it have to be necessarily on HBO?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much I buy the criticism or the idea that Kathy didn't know how much money they'd be playing with. I mean, isn't it obvious the amount of influence that Al's had over the past few years, maybe 5-6 years, that he overpays everybody? He seems to have his own deep pockets. She filed a lawsuit against him. She knew what she was dealing with, and then I don't know why they expected. Maybe they didn't expect all those sales to go up. That it was just going to be maybe an NBC deal. She didn't expect CBS, you know, ABC, ESPN, everything that Al has unrolled. Maybe that was the big surprise, not so much the big pockets. And then Al can just say, you know what? I don't need HBO. I don't need to go over there and play by your rules. I've got all these other networks. Maybe that's what she didn't expect. And this is the fractured nature of the sport, and I don't think that you can really lay the blame on anybody. These are older guys. How much did we really expect this fight to marinate? I think the time to have made this fight is not past, but it's coming up a couple times, and I think
last
this
year
is kind of culpable. Yeah,
Gabe, last year the fight was there to be made in April. And one other issue,
yep.
I was told by various sources that if Chavez would have beat Fonfara, it was going to be Chavez-Stevenson. So, you know, God bless Fonfara. And I tell you what, if you said Fonfara rematch against Stevenson or Fonfara against Kovalev, I wouldn't mind either fight. I think that guy has truly earned his spot in the 175 class. Robbie, we got to get running, okay?
Okay, have a good one. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Robbie. Thank you always for calling. 347-215-7598. Top of the hour, we'll preview the HBO card from the famed Madison Square Garden. And obviously, later in the show, we have some news and notes. Gabe?
787. Let's try this again. You're live on the next round. 787.
Hello, guys. Do you hear me? This is Javier.
Javier, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, man?
Couple of things. First of all, do you guys know anything about the guy that's fighting Verdejo? I normally don't get excited about regional fights, but Felix Verdejo is a whole different scene here in Puerto Rico, and we are going. And I'm going to watch that fight on Saturday at Guaynabo. So, do you guys know anything? Do you guys know anything about the opponent?
Yeah, Marco Lopez is one of your typically tough, solid, rugged Mexicans designed to go rounds but not win. And listen, Verdejo is scheduled to fight June 13th at the Theater of Madison Square Garden. Top Rank's not stupid. They're not here to get this guy beat. They're here to showcase him. I think they're going to sell out every single seat in that arena, about 6,000. And I believe from this point forward, the Verdejo snowball, it's rolling.
I talked to Gardy Lopez today, and he told me that there was less than 200 seats available, and it's a venue like 6,000, so I believe he will sell out. One more thing, guys. What do you think happens to Carl Froch now? Because Chavez lost, and that was like his meal ticket.
Well, that's his problem. He wanted his annuity, and guess what? It got cashed out by Bonfara, God bless his soul. So, you know, Froch can either retire or take a real fight. That's the way. And I like Carl Froch. But, you know, Gennady Golovkin's been more than willing to come up to 168 and go to the UK. Bernard Hopkins is 50 years old. He wants a piece. So without Chavez there, what excuse does he have now?
And two more quick things. First of all, one of the fights I would like to see now is for Farah. And I believe that because he's without Jaime, you cannot do the Kovalev fight. How about from Farah Berthiev? That will be a tough fight for Berthiev, I believe, and it can show us if he's really serious about becoming a contender.
That's not a bad fight. And, you know, the one thing that we don't know about Berthiev, we know he can sprint over the short distance. I want to see, can he jog a little bit into the middle rounds against a seasoned pro like Bonfara? The thing about Bonfara coming into last week, I said to anyone that would listen, a guy that could get off the canvas against Adonis Stevenson, take his power, and then floor him and make it real rough for him was not going to be intimidated by a guy like Chavez, who was masquerading as a 172-pounder. Now, after everything Bonfara has been through, and he's a surging fighter with a lot of momentum, even Berthiev with his fightful power, I guarantee you that guy would not be intimidated by him.
He's got a nice jab. I think that's going to be something that's going to keep him in good stead. He's tall, even for the weight class. He's a big guy. And I think, like you said, these experiences that he's going through them and making fights tougher and tougher for people now winning, a guy like Chavez is somebody he should beat if he's that good. Personally, I'd like to see him take the Stevenson fight. But Serbia, bring it on. I mean, either of those fights, great style matchups, all action fights. Somebody's going to sleep.
And one last thing, guys. Considering the Rock Nation now, apparently, is going to have some kind of relationship with HBO because they agree to the Cotto Gale fight, and probably if Cotto wins the Canelo fight. Do you think that with that landscape, that can probably speed up a probable Ward Kovalev fight? Maybe not this year, but maybe next year. Early next year?
Who knows? It's Andre Ward. I don't even know what to say. Andre Ward is insistent that he's staying at 168, and so I guess he's going to stay at 168. Javier, thank you for the call. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe?
He said Andre Ward, and I just honestly, it was just like all of a sudden white noise. Like, I'm sorry,
yeah.
I can't hear what you're saying. I just heard Andre Ward. 619, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, how you doing? This is Juan from San Diego. How you doing?
Juan, what's going
what's
on?
Up, man?
nothing, just coming back from a trip, and I got to see all the fights I missed the last 2 weeks, and want to get my 2 cents. I did see the Danny Garcia-Peterson fight, and I have to say I scored for Garcia, even though I thought he looked very inferior in the rounds he lost. But, again, it's rounds scored, and I scored more rounds for him. I think Peterson let go some rounds, and I think if he wouldn't have been running that much at the beginning of the fight, he would have actually won the fight. The fight last weekend, Lucas versus Ruslan, it delivered, at least in my point of view. I was very excited. I was watching it on my phone coming back from the airport, and I just was very nervous every single round, just seeing all those bombs land, and my man Ruslan couldn't deliver the final punch. But got to give it to Lucas. He looked like an improved fighter. And as I see those two fights, the one with Danny and the one with Lucas, I am beginning to think that Danny actually might have been lucky the first time around, and I can see why he's not fighting him again. The other fight that I want to talk about, that was the Chavez Jr. fight. I think I called you like a month ago and told you I wanted him to lose. He lost. I was a big fan, and now I'm not. I just caught myself smiling when I saw him getting dropped, and it's good. We got rid of him finally.
You
and
know,
it's funny,
Gabe.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about this, but I love the replay of Chavez getting knocked down because and there's a gif of this in slow motion. He gets hit off the pivot from Funfar. And by the way, Funfar's pivots from a technical standpoint I thought were brilliant. He kept Chavez at bay the whole night with those pivots on the inside. But he does the switch up where he comes into a southpaw stance. Now, when he hits Chavez on the temple, Chavez has his head rocked. Then he puts his feet together like Dorothy about to tap his toes. Then he stiffens up, and it's like he does the Nesty plunge. It was it's one of the funniest knockdowns I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was kind of awkward, you know, he didn't know how to fall. Like, it was the first time he'd never been knocked down, and he didn't even know how to fall. But, you know, I actually saw the fight from the sixth round on because I was busy watching the other fight. And I started watching the fight, and I said, this guy's losing. I can see it in his face. His whole body work just doesn't look strong enough. He's coming in with the head. He just looked like a guy that didn't have any idea how to fight this guy. And I said, if this guy thinks he can overpower 175-pounders, he is nuts.
You know what this reminds me of? Remember when Milli Vanilli, by the way, and I'll admit it, I like Milli Vanilli's first and only album. Okay, I don't care what anyone says. Their song, like, you know, Yes, You Know It's True, that comes on the radio, I'm watching it. However, it reminded me of that concert when they finally got exposed, when the tape recording of the song kept looping and they got caught lip syncing, and it turned out they can't sing a note. That was Chavez on Saturday night.
Now
he's been lip syncing for 50 fights.
Yeah, well, I have a final thing I want to talk about before I leave, and you know, I've been trying to say this for a while, but I don't like to take shots at other callers. But this guy, the one that just called before me, he always talks about Cotto, and you know, I know he's Puerto Rican and everything, but man, Cotto is a big boy. Cotto is a veteran. He doesn't deserve tune-ups. He doesn't deserve anything. If he's fighting at middleweight, he must act like a middleweight. I don't like those fighters just thinking they deserve things because they fought good fighters before. That doesn't work. He still has to fight the best. I don't care if he's Cotto, if he's Pacquiao, if he is the president of the United States, he needs to do what he has to do. That's what I have to say about that. Steve, Gabriel, I'll call you next week to talk about the fight and see if I can get tickets for that fight.
Absolutely. we're going to talk about that issue. And in all fairness to our boy Javier, one of our favorites, he did not bring up Miguel Cotto this week, Gabe, did he?
No, he didn't, and which is a rarity. Yeah, I almost I'll bring it up. I'm looking at my poster at Tito Trinidad right now.
Take a shot, folks. Take a shot.
Yeah, you gotta have a little bit of that Tito's punch, particularly on 420. You know, I agree with him, though. I mean, I'm not – you and I have been cool about catch weights over the years. Maybe that's because we're on the top-ranked payroll. And that's just
they have their place,
cool.
though. In the history of boxing, catch weights have their place. But when they're used to basically shelter fighters, Carlos Acevedo said it best about catchweights. Catchweights have been used in the past to make fights more fair or possible. Now they're just being used to be made up and to protect certain fighters. That's where I draw the line.
It's sort of like the way, you know, the next day weigh-in has been kind of perverted. It used to be so the guys, you know, could have a chance to, you know, not come into a fight dead, give a chance to replenish their brain, rehydrate. Now, I mean, look at Chavez Jr.'s career. His whole career, Bob Arum said it, was based on being able to get down in weight and then rehydrate so that he would be the bigger guy on fight night. And, you know, you take that away and there's, you look at it. I mean, he looked like a guy, he looked like the opponent. He was doing, like, the hands down at his sides, like Sergio Martinez. He did some things in there that just looked like, boy, he's not so much not a very polished boxer. He's not really a natural athlete. He just looks so awkward in there. And I think, you know, that's what catchweights have happened. People have turned it into a negotiating ploy, sort of like drug testing also, where you get drug tested a couple times a year, but you're not really into anti-doping. You're just into hamstringing your opponent. That's just not the same thing. We need more regulations on that, I think.
By the way, one point about Chavez, a loss is a loss, but Golovkin last year would have paid him $7 million guaranteed with a $5 million guarantee of a comeback fight. So that's a two-fight, $12 million deal. And I guess Chavez put up on Instagram two checks totaling $4.1 million. Last I checked, $7 million is a little bit more than $4.1 million. Right, Gabe? I'm that one Asian that wasn't good on my SATs in the math department. But I am correct in that, right?
Yes, you are. It was a fight that was probably more winnable in terms of size. You have a smaller guy who doesn't really have to kill himself to make 160, lives right around that weight. He'd have been the bigger man, making bigger money. And potentially, you know, if he'd have beat Triple G, people would worship the dude. Now, I mean, nobody wants to know his name. They're throwing beers at him. Mexican boxing fans that throw beer, they got to be pretty upset.
Let me just say this. Even with that size disadvantage, Golovkin would have beat him like a pinata to a point. Jolly Ranchers and Snickers bars would have been coming out of Chavez's stomach. That would have been like a pinata in East L.A. just getting shackled and hit and ransacked for like about 7 or 8 rounds. And there's a reason why he didn't take that fight, in my opinion. Let's get back to the phone lines, Gabe.
It knocked the silver right off the spoon. In the 702, you're live on the next round. 702. Nope. All right, just listening. 347, you're live on the next round. 347. Mike from Queens? No? Caller dropped. All right, 407, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, Steve? What's up, Gabe?
Good, what's going on?
I have a question for you guys. It sounds funny, but does Al Haymon, do they have matchmakers? It's funny that, and I know I'm going to sound like a money quarterback and all that, but it's almost like Chavez, or nobody did their homework on Fonfara. The dude has stamina, he has a chin, he has a good work rate. He's tough. If you watch his fights over the years, he's slowly gotten, you know, kind of better and better. I don't know what you guys were even thinking. It was just it was almost a mismatch. To me, in my opinion, when this fight was announced, this was as bad of a matchup as, like, Delorme and Abregu. To me, it was just such a total mismatch. I couldn't believe it.
You know, when they made this fight, and Gabe has kind of been on the Fonfara bandwagon quicker than any of us, I said to myself, this is strange. And I thought it was very telling that Julio Sr. said, I didn't want this fight. He was the one guy that really said, wait a minute, this is not the best idea. And second of all, it was what I talked about before, any guy that can go 36 minutes with Adonis Stevenson, dust himself off the canvas twice, and then give that guy hell, he's going to look at Chavez as like saying, you're really nothing. And the other issue is this, let's be blunt. Chavez just isn't that good.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you can even, you know, go back to his early days in Top Rank. He was kind of like the laughing stock of boxing for a while. But, you know, Top Rank, I don't know, man. They brought this guy along and moved him up and did what they're supposed to be doing and all that. But you could see in the Vera fight where he really was. Once he didn't really have the size advantage, or I don't know if he can't make 160. Well, you know he can't make 160 anymore. No way. But so what's in his future? A rematch with Fonfire? I don't think so.
At 170 though. But at 170.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus, you got to be kidding me.
Here's another issue.
I don't know.
Go all the way back. Chavez struggled with Matt Vanda. Okay?
You're absolutely right.
And to this day, I still don't think he beat Sebastian Zibic. Gabe, me and you were there. I thought Zibic won
that fight
7-5.
Yeah, he did. He did. It was as clear a win as I've ever seen. What a weird night that was. I remember watching Sergio Martinez after the fight, and he's standing in the crowd. They wouldn't even give him, like, good seats. They gave him seats, like, in the back on the floor. And he's standing there, like, the sixth row staring at Chavez Jr., who's standing on the turnbuckle in a fight he didn't win, holding up Sergio Martinez's belt that he got stripped of. It's just, what a moment. And you just, you really watch the kid, and it's, like you said, I've said for years, everything's been handed to him. Wins that weren't his, belts that shouldn't have been around his waist, TV dates, when, you know, really, probably more deserving fighters could have used that money and used that time, and would have probably developed fight to fight better than Chavez Jr. It's just, it all came home to roost. And
Gabe, we have to be honest about this. Bob Arum and Top Rank, they were enablers of this. The same things that Bob Arum criticizes Chavez for. Bob, you guys were the parent that let your kid miss curfew every night of the week. You found weed in his room, a 12-pack in his Maserati, and when he got caught for drunk driving, instead of grounding him, you bought him another Benz. Let's be honest. They were the ones who created and enabled this monster and eventually cashed out, to be fair. Is there anything else we can do for you?
One last question. With Matisse, good tough fight over the weekend. Man, real tough. I know he's pursuing the big money fights, and I would agree with that. That's the route to go. You know, perhaps Pacquiao or Mayweather, the winner of that fight. But if Mayweather were to win that fight, and I still say there's going to be a rematch, if Mayweather wins that fight, could that fight be made, Matisse Mayweather? Would Golden Boy do business without him?
No.
Still too. Yeah, I wouldn't think so. No.
I believe that's the Cold War gone nuclear. And by the way, you talk about a Mayweather-Pacquiao rematch. Will they have tickets on sale for that one by then? Just wondering.
I'm telling you right now, count on it. There's going to be a rematch. That's a two-fight deal. Count on it.
Okay, thank you very much. Gabe, let's get to the HBO broadcast from the famed Madison Square Garden. I think both of us are going with Chalk City. We like Klitschko over Brian Jennings. Gabe, how much of a shot do you give Francisco Chia Santana, who's on a surge here, 11 straight wins, big win last year over Eddie Gomez, against the skilled Saddam Ali? I think Ali still has to be the favorite here, doesn't he?
He does. I think, you know, Santana, you can punch a bit, he can box. But I just think that Ali is on a roll. He's a durable kid. He's got nice speed, nice tools. I think the power is probably better than people think, and it's kind of sneaky power. I expect him to win going away. I wouldn't even be surprised if it ends in like a last quarter of the fight stoppage for Ali.
Gabe, this is funny. I talked to Bob earlier about this May 2nd thing. There's still no tickets, and it was pointed out to me that even though they announced the closed circuit price of $150, which is a bargain, because, Gabe, it's for the fans, always for the fans, closed circuit tickets are not even on sale yet. Also, the weigh-in, I guess they're going to charge $10 because of quote-unquote crowd control. Okay, I'm dubious about that. I want to see proof that all the proceeds are going to charities. Those aren't even on sale. And if you look at the week's events, going into May 2nd, everything is Tom Bob Anderson, TBA. Now, last I checked, we are 2 weeks away and counting towards the fight. And Gabe, this is amazing. Bob actually said, this is ridiculous. Now it's going to the governor's office. Gabe, they're getting the feds involved. Uh-oh.
Wow, well, Bob's doing... Well, is the governor going to get on that, or is he still working on Bob's investigation into the movie match? the judge
in
the first Pacquiao Bradley fight, but I think it is. It's funny how many times have we been lectured in business by Floyd Mayweather and Leonard Ellerbe, how we don't understand the business and you guys don't know what goes on. It takes 6 months to build a pay per view, And this fight, it's kind of broken all of their rules, it would seem. It didn't really take 6 months to, you know, this fight, quote unquote, promotes itself. Where the hell are the tickets? Why is this some sort of great new wrinkle that they've added to the game? I mean, we've long talked about this, that Al has control of, we've heard he's had control of that secondary market, that the scalpers you run into night of the fight are more than likely Al's folks. So I'm wondering, are they really just hoping that the craze, as like the John Chavez was trying to argue with you, that it's all good because people are going to go so crazy for these tickets that they're going to make money hand over fist, and that's all good because it's boxing. I'm not the biggest John Chavez fan. He tends to argue for boxing remaining in the alley in the red light district. And I just don't think these practices are good. I think on some level, somebody has to protect the consumer, as you pointed out.
Well, yeah, and I wish some of the boxing writers would stop acting like Darren Rovell and breathlessly reporting, oh, my God, they're making $1 billion. Oh, my God. hey, guys, can we talk about the consumers? There are literally people flying in from overseas who they understand we're not going to get a ticket to the fight. But is it too much to say, hey, guys, here's some closed circuit tickets. This is what you have to pay. Enjoy your weekend. I find that problematic when we're literally telling the public, just enjoy what you're getting. I've literally had writers say, just enjoy the fight and shut up and don't – you know what? You be quiet. Part of our job is to actually say, wait a minute, this ain't kosher. It's not right. And someone actually said, Steve, you're really a crusader on this. No, I'm not. I'm doing my damn job. You know, like actually being critical. And certain stuff here is just very, very problematic. Now, here's an email from Warren Wortham, Dub Dub, one of our loyal listeners. And he says to me right here, quote, many casual fans here in Waterloo, Iowa, that are rabid Mayweather fans don't even know about the fight. The few that do don't even know when it's taking place. They may break records, but it will not be anywhere near what it could potentially do numbers-wise because of the weak promotion, lack of public tickets, and high cost. Also, pay-per-views almost always have some technical glitches. Is Mayweather Promotions going to be equipped to handle that or make sure the broadcast tech is up to speed or better yet at the venue? I believe the technical issues, that's up to the networks, but I'm literally hearing none of the hotels or the MGM has tickets. None of the camps have tickets, and Bob made it explicitly clear. We have a binding agreement, and we're going to enforce every single moment of that agreement. This is ridiculous. So I think it's going to be interesting. I talked to a ticket broker in Verona who really knew the ins and outs of the business. He told me on their side of the table, they're not even taking orders for tickets, and he believes with the prices they've set and this artificial secondary market they're trying to recreate, he thinks it's the worst thing that they can do and that the tickets are going to plummet on the day of the fight. So keep that in mind. But I do find it almost criminal the way they are treating these people who have taken the time to book a flight, to get a hotel, to openly be gouged, and then you treat them like that. That's problematic, and that's one of the problems that I have with the customer service in the sport of boxing. Gabe, let's get back to the calls.
Yeah, we could go on all night about this, too. Honestly, the $100 ticket, I'm a little, perturbed by it. I mean, you're getting one good fight between two guys who haven't knocked out anybody in years, who are – on the other side of the hill, they haven't looked like crap in their last few fights, but they're deep into their 40s, not prime. But they're charging $100 for this. Like, you know what I could do in an evening with $100? I mean, $100 is like a quarter of a Burning Man ticket. That's a week-long festival. I'm with you. I don't just take what's given and just be happy. It seems ridiculous to me. And the 805, you're live on the next round.
Hello.
Hi. Hello. Hi, guys. This is Nacho.
Nacho, welcome aboard.
Yeah. Thanks. Man, that fight between Matisse and Provodnikov was awesome. I'm glad we got to see that. But I am disappointed that instead of that being at the StubHub, we got that garbage Chavez fight, which was hilarious to watch him get pelted with beer and water at the end.
Nacho, hold on for a quick second. I'm assuming you're Latino, correct, with a name like Nacho?
Yes, I am.
Are you Mexican?
Yes, I am.
Now, did you ever think to see a day when you would openly laugh and root against a guy with the Chavez surname who is the son of the Lion of Culiacan?
You know what? I'm going to be completely honest. I've been watching him pretty much since day one, And I really didn't think he was going to be great. So by the time he actually was maneuvered into a title fight, I was surprised that he had actually gotten that far. And pretty much after that, I really didn't have any expectations. So the fact that he's gotten this far is just surprising to me. But at this point, he is what he is. He's a guy with a name. So,
Nacho, in your estimation, do you think that the consensus among Mexican fans is that this is done? Just kill it, stick a fork in it, it's over?
You know what? I was watching the fight with a group of friends, and all of us pretty much said that it's going to be really tough for him to come back from this, because not only did he get his butt kicked, he also quit. And that's just the ultimate sin as far as the fact that he just decided to quit. And then what made it even worse was when he told Jim Gray that he thought he was winning.
Yeah.
We couldn't believe that. So, yeah, I don't see him coming back from this. I'd be shocked if he did. So,
yeah it's going to be hard to get that aura back, you know? I mean, it's just that he didn't really have all that much goodwill to begin with, you know, being the son of. But like we were talking earlier on the show, I'm Mexican too, and it's like I'm not really big on people to just get stuff handed to them. We're a hardworking culture, and it's just not how we roll. And Chavez just always seemed arrogant to me, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. He's just kind of been given everything, and it's kind of come back to haunt him now. My only question now is, how pissed off is Al Heyman that his cash cow just took a big loss?
Well, that's his problem. And, you know, I don't know what to really say other than with Chavez, he was supposed to anchor, I guess, the Latin version of the PBC. And right now, Mexican fighters and Latin fighters in general, check their records on televised fights on the PBC. It ain't good.
Yeah, exactly. So that was just, yeah, that was terrible.
Just real quick, Al's just like Don King, though, you know, in his prime. He always leaves with a winner. So, yeah, while he lost Chavez Jr., lost a good name, he's got Fanfara. So, I mean, maybe that's something.
Yeah, exactly. And also, really quick, I wanted to know if you guys had seen the Tony Luis-Derry Matthews fight.
I have not seen it. My DVD copy is on the way. I heard that was a very, very close fight that could have gone either way.
It was. It was a really good fight. That probably might have been the best fight nobody's talking about.
Interesting. Nacho, I will certainly get on that. My DVD should be on the way as we speak. Nacho, thank you for the call. We have at least 13 more minutes going all the way up to 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. If the participation is there, 347-215-7598. Gabe?
Let's see, 724, you're live on the next round.
Yeah, you guys pretty much covered what I wanted to ask about the whole the fight being away, and just wanted to know if TMT just doesn't have the infrastructure to handle this thing, or what, or they're not using Golden Boy this time. And what are the chances of you thinking this fight getting postponed just on the strength that they don't have everything together yet?
I think you nailed it on the head. For all the talk of Mayweather promotions and all this other stuff, they've never done an event without the infrastructure of Golden Boy Promotions. But I did ask Bob Arum. This is classic Bob Arum. I said, Bob, but there is going to be a fight May 2nd, right? He goes, yeah, there's going to be a fight. Now, there may not be any fans in there, but we're going to have a fight. So there you go.
Okay, yeah, that's it. That's all I wanted to know.
All right, thank you very much. But it is interesting, and I've said this before, and I've used this analogy again. If you're going to run the Kentucky Derby and you have Secretariat, you don't use a sumo wrestler as a jockey. And I think if they had it to do over again, given the fact even they did not have the leverage and they knew that Manny Pacquiao was going to have to take the smaller split, I think Bob Arum, in going through this logistical nightmare, would insist on more control over the day-to-day operations of that promotion.
I think it's all been ego. It's, you know, we've got to let everybody know that Floyd's in charge. This is Floyd.
Yeah.
You know, like we saw the Ellerbe interviews, you know, Floyd is, he had to use four varies. You know, if you use four varies to describe something, you need to expand your vocabulary. Just one. But just like really, 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 like,
whoa.
How really?
Whoa.
Involved Izzy. But I just think, you know, the CEO of Shit Up, you're calling him.
Martin Way, no, that's not me. That credit has to be given at Brother Boxing. Martin Way, that's his all-time line, the CEO of Shit Up.
That's beautiful. It just goes to show you, they've always wanted him, and it's always been this illusion. Like, I remember, I think it was Ortiz Mayweather, it was like the last Mayweather fight I covered live, and covered the press. And I asked them, who's the lead promoter? Did Golden Boy, or has Mayweather Promotions gotten a promoter's license yet? This is before they had. And Ellerbe, rather than answering that question, just kept saying over and over again, it's a co-promotion. It's a co-promotion. And for a long time,
Gabe,
it was like they really – what's that?
Well, Gabe, this year's a no promotion.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, okay, now you guys are clearly in the lead with your promoter's license. Where are the tickets? Why is that such a big – I just don't understand it. All of them.
Oh, by the way,
I
fully expect not to get a credential. In fact, I'm counting on it. They've barely sent out the credential request forms. I think only a few people have gotten them. The rest of us are kind of waiting for our rejection letters. Come on, get on that, guys. Come on, Leonard. I'm just waiting here to cancel my Southwest flight. Come on. But anyway, 347-215-7598 if you want to tweet us, at Gabriel_Montoya, at SteveUCNLive. Gabe?
602. You're live on the next round. 602. 602.
Oh, we got another knockdown.
All right. Let's see. In the 510, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, Gabe? What's up, Steve? This is Fernando over here in Richmond across the bridge from Gabe. How you guys doing?
Fernando,
hey,
what's going on?
So, guys, hey, I heard a rumor the other day that the PDC, they already got their belt designed. And it's like a big silver spoon with a strap around it. Is that true?
Okay. Yeah. I can confirm the latter, or I can confirm the former. I can't confirm the latter or the whatever. I screwed that up. But they are going to have their own title belt, in my opinion. Yes.
But no silver spoon. Because, you know, like Garcia, he's like the super light welterweight champion of the world. And Leo Santa Cruz, he's a TBA champ of the world, you know? Like, you know, I'm just really excited about it, you know? So I don't know.
TBA champion of the world. I like that.
I had high hopes for him, man. I had high hopes for Leo Santa Cruz, but he just wants to be the TBA champ, you know? So whatever, man. Hey, I want to get to the point. I cut off my cable a long time ago, and now it's got Apple TV. So I got the YouTube channel. I got Grantland on there, UCN Live, and they put some really cool videos on there. And Jalen Rose, he had a little series on there recently where he interviewed Bob Arum, Trey Roach, and Manny. And he asked Bob something really interesting on there. He was asking him about the purse play just brought up at 60-40, whatever. And Bob Arum said, no, it's not exactly 60-40. That if Manny wins, he actually gets a couple extra points out of the fight. That sounds like a bet. I'm just wondering, like, is it a significant amount or how much it might be? You know, it's interesting.
You know, I certainly wouldn't know anything about it. Would it surprise me? No, but, you know, listen, that's millionaires cutting up money. Good for them.
All right. I guess you're not interested. One last thing. The PDC, right, they've been kind of like flooding the market lately with the boxing. Almost doesn't even matter what channel it's on. But how can they really ever expect to get any kind of money out of True TV or Spike Channel to pay them back for the person they're paying it right now? What are the odds that maybe like 3 or 4 years from now, after they've kind of like rekindled the interest in boxing, that they start their own over-the-top network, you know, maybe like $10 a month or whatever, because that's about the only way they're ever going to really make any money, I think. What do you guys think?
Gabe, haven't we heard that rumor that his goal is to kind of do what the WWE has done with their own online component?
Yeah, I've heard that rumor from a few sources I trust, but you know, the article today seemed to go with the theory that really what they're doing is looking to kind of, you know, bleed out a couple hundred million, entrenching their brand, all of the networks and the consciousness of young fans, start pulling in those people. Like, they've already got us. you let me know where boxing is going to be, I'm going to watch it. You know, that's the attitude of pretty much every boxing fan I know. And if the easier to get to, you know, the better. But they want that other guy. They want the sports fan, the NASCAR guy, the NFL guy that's not doing anything on a Saturday. And fine, you know, guys are beating each other up and I don't have to pay extra money to see it. Awesome, let's watch that. That's what they're trying to do. So I think we're really not going to see where this is going for at least a year, I think, a year and a half. But, you know, maybe they go to the subscription thing, but maybe the ratings get better and they get to a point where advertisers start buying in and paying for these shows. And then, you know, all those overpriced salaries are just salaries. I mean, when you look at us compared to other sports, our salaries don't look that bloated. Even the ones with Al Heyman, comparatively speaking, I'd like to see somebody that's better at math than me do a comparison. But it seems like we are a little bit in the dark ages when we get to our minor leagues, like the ESPN guys in terms of salary. So we'll see.
Well, I think you're right. You definitely see that because, like, look at the Dodgers. They got like a $40 billion contract coming up because it's live sports, and that's what's really pulling in the ratings nowadays. Everybody else, you know, kind of skips the commercials and stuff and misses live. Anyways, thank you for taking my phone call. I really enjoy the show.
Anytime. Gabe, in my mailbox just a couple of minutes ago, I have this press release sent by the people involved with May 2nd, and it says 147-pound weight class takes center stage again for Floyd Manny. And this is a very long press release, okay? It says a lot of things, you know, comparing people, brings up the name Parnell Whitaker, Basilio, Armstrong, talks about Leonard Duran, this, and that. And it says a lot of things here, except about tickets or closed circuit. This is bizarre. You put out a press release talking about a fight that we've known about for a while, and it has no pertinent information for the consumer. Again, for the fans. For the fans, Gabe, always for the fans.
It doesn't even say how much the pay-per-view is.
Oh, no, they're changing their mind? They are going $120, Gabe.
I mean, seriously, this is – what the hell? I mean, are they counting on the fact that, like, they're going to announce at, like, 5:30, it's going to be $150 for the pay-per-view, and then everybody that's
Gabe,
at a party –
Gabe, do not give them any ideas. What is wrong with you?
I keep driving the prices up. I'm sorry. That's – I've never seen anything like that. That's
and Gabe, you know what's interesting, though? There is good news. Manny does have his deal with Wonderful Pistachio, so we do have that.
Yes, I love that. That's I want to just kind of take them up on that, just because I want to know, are they actually Wonderful Pistachios?
Hey, don't. Hey, you know what, Gabe? I've had a couple, and they are wonderful. So stop being a cynic. Jeez, Gabe. God.
Are they organic, though? I'm going to San Francisco too long.
True. You're asking the hard-hitting questions, Gabe. That's hard-hitting stuff right there.
No GMOs, no WBC. Overseas, I think, 642 is your preface. You're live on the next round.
Well, guys, it's Robbie from New Zealand. I'm actually Australian.
Well, good day, mate. Good day.
How are you, mate?
I am doing well, just having a Foster's here. I'm sure you're having one, too.
Wow. People in Australia were drinking Foster's about 20 years ago. We drink VB.
Okay, sorry. That's the only Australian beer I knew from the commercials. I'm sorry. So, Robbie, what can we do for you?
All right. Listen, first of all, guys, you are doing a fantastic job. I listen to your radio show every week.
Thank you.
On Twitter. Oh. And you are the Bill Hicks of boxing writers.
Yes.
Wow, what a great compliment, Gabe.
That is as high a praise as you could ever give. Kill me now.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I just want to say a couple things. I need you to do some investigative reporting for me. The Andy Lee Quinlan fight, I want you to ask him or probe him and ask him the question, did he have a secret rehydration clause in that fight? Because he didn't look like much over 160 when he fought Quinlan.
Huh. You know what? I let me just be the Pollyanna for once. Maybe Andy Lee actually stayed in shape, and maybe he just kind of, you know, played by the rules.
Okay. Well, listen, I'll tell you something, right? I've been following boxing and horse racing all my life, and I've got some OCD on the fact of weight and fat and being overweight, blah, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
And on Quinlan's Twitter page, the day before the weigh-in, I actually said to him, and my handle is Big Drama Show, I actually said to him, you're going to come in overweight, because he actually looked overweight, and he came in
uh-huh.
overweight. And when I saw
wow.
Andy Lee for the fight, he looked about 163, 164. And
huh.
I want you to do some probing on that.
Yeah, and ringside,
okay.
Robbie, one question, being from Australia, why isn't Michael Katsidis just flat out being made to retire? He's one of my favorite guys. Why is he still being allowed to box?
Michael Katsidis comes from Queensland, and the area that he comes from is very rough. It's very rough, and he's had a big rough life, and he's going to have that for the rest of his life. And he's a fighter, and that's all he is. He fights on the streets, and he fights in the ring.
Mm. Okay.
And,
I just, it's really too bad. He really was a character, and I really loved him. It just to see him in this physical state and still taking headshots, it's just something wrong where the regulators need to step in and say, Michael, it's not your day anymore.
I know, sure. But we can say the same thing about Ruslan Podikov also. You know what I mean? We love these guys, but we feel sorry for them after.
Yes,
yeah,
you may
I'm
have a point there. Robbie, thank
yeah.
you for calling from Down Under.
No worries, guys. Keep up the good
thank
work.
You.
No
absolutely. Thank
right.
you very much. Folks, we are exactly at 5:30. Let's go
yeah.
through some news and notes before we hit the phone lines. Gabe, here's an interesting situation going on from May 29th to June 13th. You're going to have Miguel Cotto, Daniel Gill at the Barclays Center. Then the week before, May 29th, you're going to have Amir Khan, Chris Algieri at the Barclays Center. And then June 13th, Puerto Rican Day Parade weekend. Viva Puerto Rico! Oh, I had to get that in there. From the MSG Theater, starring Felix Verdejo and maybe Nicholas Walters. Gabe, I've never seen where a major venue, non-casino, had two events in a row. I can't ever recall a major city having three boxing events in a row. That's a lot of boxing in the Big Apple.
That's a beautiful thing for them. I mean, that used to be a mecca for boxing, you know, New York. And now to see them revitalized with that new venue out there, the Barclays Center, I kind of wondered what was going to happen with it. And it's always good when something like that happens, when you know, we get more exposure, more people seeing fights. I'm curious what the market will be like, though. I mean, are they going to kill it with comps? Or are some of those actually going to be paid seats? What is that market like, and can it sustain three fights like that? Are there enough fight fans to keep coming back and make it profitable for everybody?
Gabe, the key term here is cannibalization. And I think the Verdejo-Walters fight is insulated from it for one reason. Verdejo is extremely popular in Puerto Rico. I mean, there's a buzz around this kid, and they only have 4,500 tickets to sell. The Barclays Center has a big room. That's about 18,000 to 20,000. The Amir Khan-Algieri fight, I don't know how well that's going to draw, but the ringside's only 250. Now, Cotto's an interesting case. We know he's a draw. We know he's iconic. They're going $500. And I remember when I went to the Gil-Golovkin fight last year, I didn't see a lot of Aussies at the Garden that particular night, June 26th. And, Gabe, we talked about this earlier. Felix Verdejo takes on Marco Lopez in Puerto Rico. They expect a full house. I'm telling you right now, I think this kid has it. We need to find out a few things. But if he was a stock, I would buy him hand over fist. I think he's got it.
Yeah, he's fun to watch, man. And I think that's the it, you know. And then you look at his size, 5'9", 72-inch reach. He's a lightweight that's going to grow in all the way to welterweight, and it's going to be fun watching him do it, you know. I want to see him get, you know, punched in the face a bit, though. I want to see him caught with something that he wasn't expecting and see about those whiskers. See about, you know, what's underneath him. You know, we're finding out so much about Crawford, who's, you know, granted, much further along in his development. But I kind of wonder, you know, and I tend to feel that Verdejo's got that thing, but I want to see it.
You don't know how a young fighter is going to deal with adversity till it really literally just smacks him right in the face. And Friday night on Spike, Anthony Durrell takes on Badu Jack, and then Daniel Jacobs takes on Caleb Truax. And, Gabe, here is a recurring theme with the PBC Premier Boxing Comps, that one iota, the seat-filling company, they are on the scene in the Windy City.
work to be had by all. I'm telling you, do you get SAG credit for being in One Iota? Sounds like a boy band. We've got a ton of calls here.
Let's get to them.
All right. In the 619, let's start with the newest. You're live on an X round. 619, you're in your car.
Oh, is that me?
That's you.
Hello?
Yes, who is this?
Oh, this is Art. Hey, first time caller, I'm a little nervous, but what a bad week
right.
Kathy Doolin main events had this week. What was
not
that
a great
about?
Look for him. Not a great look, and I think that when you initiate a purse bid and you get what you want and then you back out of it, even though there are business reasons which are valid to the general public, it ain't kosher.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said, they forced the bid, and then for them to do that, I just couldn't believe it. And then Kovalev, I don't know if that picture was Photoshopped, but that was a bad look too. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, is that the one with the ape with boxing gloves? I'm like, come on, you cannot be that stupid. Jeez.
Yeah, yeah, it was just a horrible week over there. But, hey, man, I love your guys' show. And, hey, Gabe, the Kimsters cheating on you with another actor doing a boxing podcast.
No. The home is always Leave It in the Ring Radio Network in the next round with Gabe Montoya and Steve Kim. And stop snitching, man. No snitching. Jeez, God.
All right, guys. Have a good
All
week.
Right. If you want to call in, we have up to 24 minutes, 347-215-7598. Gabe?
I look at the more, you know, Steve's shows like boxing. The more of it there is, the better it is for everybody. That's
oh, well, Gabe, you're making me blush. Ah, oh, gee, shucks. Thanks,
right, you
Gabe.
Know, that's spreading the love. 707, you're live on the next round.
Hey, it's Carl.
Carl!
Carl!
My man, what's going on?
Hey, Gabe, I got a question for you, man. Since you're out in the Bay, are you going to watch, are you going to go to the Andre Ward fight in Oakland, man? June 20th?
I'm sorry, but in the Montoya household, Saturday nights are for dancing with the wife. So, no, I'm not going. The only dancing, I'm not going to watch Andre Ward dance. We're going to go out and hit the club. I'll maybe watch it on TV because it's part of my job, but I'm not rushing out to see Andre Ward in a tune-up. I already went to the Tachi Palace in the armpit of California.
You did.
to see Andre Ward against Sugar Pew Buchanan. So I have a couple get-out-of-jail-free cards with that fight alone.
what network does he even fight on, man? And then I also heard that that's when Broner is supposed to come back on PBC. I think people would be more interested in that opposed to watching Andre Ward.
Andre Ward might be on BET, and I'm going to say it right now. I'm repeating myself. Donnie Simpson better be the host for that show. I grew up on Video Vibrations and Donnie Simpson. And as for Adrian Broner, you're not going to believe this, guys. You know one of the names being brought up to face Adrian Broner on NBC? Brace yourselves. Zab Judah.
Zab Judah?
Wow, you guys are stunned. The silence is deafening here.
I heard something about that Rancis Bartholomew cat. Is that true as well? Did you hear that?
Let's hope not, but I've heard that also.
I'll take Zab Judah over that. That's, man, he must be looking good in Floyd sparring, I guess. Zab, that's a weird fight. I mean, is Zab retired? I mean, he didn't quite look, you know, he didn't look too good in his last fight. Hasn't fought in a while.
I just remember him getting blanked by, well, Gabe, he got blanked by Malignaggi, and he looked like a guy that couldn't pull the trigger anymore.
Right.
That's what he looked like.
So,
to
I mean, yeah, I don't understand what they're expecting here. I mean, I guess Al's got all those dates. He's got to have people to fill him with. And, you know, Zab looks like a guy that can't pull the trigger, but he's not Shotsky. He's not like, wow, this guy's terrible. He needs to retire. So they could roll him out there again. Wow. That's I think he has the least power left. It's brutal. That's an ugly matchup.
Carl, anything else we could do for you?
Man, that's it, Ben. I think on Saturday, Klitschko fights, what's his name, man? He's going to keep that stick on his ass, man, and he'd be out of there in about the fourth round, man.
All right. Well, Carl, listen, I'm going to call you later. I got some Mayweather Pacquiao tickets I'm going to mail you, okay? So just stay tight, okay?
It sounds good, man. All right, later, fellas. Well,
Gabe, you really sounded like he believed me there.
You know what's crazy is I got a text here during from Z, our friend back east, who keeps abreast of these things. On the site SeatGeek.com, tickets, people are like, it's like they're bartering for tickets that don't exist. It's going for somewhere between 6,000 to people bidding up to 52,000 for tickets that do not exist. That's insanity to me.
You know, someone needs to do a meme or create a GIF of the Yeti or Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster who has like four tickets holding them. Because you know what's funny? Because I believe more in the Yeti or Bigfoot right now than Mayweather Pacquiao tickets. Because if you showed me that, I'd be like, that is not believable. I'm sorry. There's no such thing that exists as the Mayweather Pacquiao tickets.
There's actually pictures of Bigfoot.
Right. Footprints, big ones, too.
It's true. In the 773, you're live on the next round.
Hello. Troy from Chicago.
From the Shy Ten, are you going to One Iota? Have you logged on there to get your free tickets for this week's Spike show?
Actually, I did on Friday. I put in for two, and a buddy of mine, he put in for two, but we haven't heard anything back yet.
All right, don't worry. Don't worry. You'll get hooked up. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, and first I want to say thank you for Saturday, Dave. That was a good show you put on there during the fight.
Oh, cool. I'm glad you guys are liking that. It's kind of a bit of an experiment we're doing with the live broadcast, an alternative to...
I got tired of hearing Bob Hopkins, so... What's that?
You enjoyed listening to Roy and Max? Boy, they talk incessantly during the fight.
It was Bob Hopkins, actually. And a few rounds with the first fight, and I said, let me turn this off and switch over. So I enjoyed that. But my highlight of my night was Chavez going down. That was the toast of the night.
Do you agree with me that knockdown where he did the Nestie plunge is one of the greatest things you've ever seen in a boxing ring?
Well, you know, I was sitting at home by myself watching the fight. My neighbors knocked on the door. They thought I was having a party. That's how it started. And
by the way,
what's that?
As it relates to Fonfara, now that he's thanked Al Haymon, I think they need to bring him to Chicago because I know he sold a few tickets. But I think he could become a legitimate attraction there in the Windy City, given the Polish population that exists out there.
Yes, he does. He pulled in a decent crowd up at the Pavilion, which is funny because I checked the tickets for this Friday, and I don't even think they sold 10% of the seats yet.
Ooh, not good. Not good.
Real light. But it's a point I've been wanting to make about the PBC. In order for the PBC to go somewhere, they have to create some type of drama. It's each one of their fights, it's like boxing, getting two names and just putting them together regardless of how they mesh. It becomes boring. So until they could create some type of drama, and the only way I could see that happening is every now and then they have to challenge Top Rank or Golden Boy in some kind of way.
I don't disagree with you, Gabe. It's one thing to put two names together. That's not matchmaking. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it's you know, what the audience is getting is you know, the A side winning constantly. And I don't understand how people can find that to be an acceptable product and want to go out and see it. It just makes no sense to me.
Okay, anything else I can do for you?
Oh, no, that's thing. Thanks for taking my call.
Here's a tweet from Jason Martinez. Did you see where Ellerby said Mayweather Promotions has promoted boxing's biggest fight? I literally laughed out loud. Yes, lulz. Lulz indeed. Gabe, who's next?
In the 402, you're live on the next round.
Hi, this is Azeem from Omaha, Nebraska. How are you guys doing?
Azeem, welcome to the next round.
Well, I kind of disagree with one caller who said he doesn't want to see Chavez fight again. I want to see him fight Kovalev, if that's possible.
Oh, Joey, you murderer. Are you trying to get a guy killed, Azeem? Jeez,
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And moving on, Forbes and Bloomberg, they just did an article, or actually Forbes did an article on Manny Pacquiao today, in which they said that if Pacquiao wins the fight, he will end up making more money than Mayweather because of his sponsorship deals with Nike and the bonus structure they have with him. And they're also saying that there's no guarantee. If, like, the pay-per-view doesn't do more than 3 million buys, it's not a guarantee that both Floyd and Manny are going to make their minimum. So what do you guys think about that?
Because they're not guys. You know what? You know what I think? I think if that happens, we need to throw them a benefit and write them donation checks. Jeez. Poor guys. They got families to feed, Gabe. How can they just settle for under $100 million, those gallant warriors?
Yeah, you know, it's not to dog the call or anything. Really appreciate the call. But the obsession that sports fans have with athletes' money is so weird to me. Nobody's – where are the callers that call in and go, you know, at 37 and 38, are these guys going to be able to give us a good fight?
But, Gabe, I disagree,
though.
I think other fans care about salaries because they have salary caps and budgets and how it fits into a team. But once a guy signs a contract, they care about production. That's where I think I would separate boxing fans from the general sports fan in, like, let's say, the NBA or the NFL.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it is prize fighting, and so, you know, the purse kind of being there symbolically over the ring, like, this is what these guys are fighting for, this amount of money, and it goes up. I mean, I can see the obsession, but it's just, like, let's all get them to $3 million. How about let's all get a good product and use that buying power that we have in order to get that done? You know, that's what I want to hear from fans, not, oh, God, this would be the richest gate in history. Yeah, I'm not seeing any of it, so I don't really care.
347. Yeah, go ahead.
You're live on the next round. 347. Oh, sorry, 716. You're live on the next round.
And it's a knockdown.
All right. It's a knockdown. 203. You're live on the next round.
Hi, hello?
Yeah, nice. What's going on?
Hey, it's Destro from New York. Hey, guys, I'm thinking, I mean, what do you guys think about Triple G? Perhaps maybe he should start fighting, like, at, I don't know, like 156, 157, because it seems like he really wants the Cotto fight. And if that's what he wants, maybe he should start conditioning his body to be able to compete at 150, you know, to make weight at 156, 157.
Let me just say this. If Cotto said, I will fight you next at 157, done deal. I guarantee you it'd be done deal.
Wow.
But here's the problem. Yeah. Can you get Cotto's side of the equation to agree to that fight?
You know, I think Cotto, I got to say, like, I kind of have like a – I'm starting to lose respect for Cotto, but I think he's fought everybody, right? It seems like, you know, under, you know, circumstances that are unfavorable to him, he fought everyone. I think he may fight Triple G if he can get Triple G to fight, like, at 155 – you know, I'm sure he'll be taking a look at this Willie Monroe Jr. fight to see how Triple G does. But I think Cotto probably would say, you know what, I'll fight you at 154.2 or something like that. I think he may do it.
Gabe, I want to see him get past June 6th. I do not think it's a layup against Daniel Gill.
No, I don't think it is either. He's fighting a legit guy, a big guy that's going to be crowding him, being all over him. The weight thing might hurt him. I don't think Gil is happy about it at all. But, you know, what are you going to do? You know, it is what it is. You can call that. But I don't think this is a layup. Particularly, you know, Cotto was at the tail end of his career. Nobody gets rejuvenated at 35, 36 years, or 34 or 35, wherever he is. It just doesn't happen. So anything can happen in that fight. We'll see.
Okay.
All right, listen, thank you for the call. Please join us again. We have 12 minutes to go here or less. Gabe, who's next?
315, you're live on the next round.
Yeah, you got Dan in New York?
Hey, yes, who is this?
Yeah, Dan from Syracuse.
Dan, what's going on? Enjoyed your airport, if not necessarily your city this past weekend.
What was wrong with the city?
No, I just drove past it. I didn't get to spend any time there.
Okay. That's awesome. Scooter picked you up on time, right?
Yeah, well, no, Sherman Douglas was there. He was the general. We threw lob passes to each other.
Okay.
It was just like 87 all over again.
Nice. Quick question. One I had was I plan on going to the fight in New York City at the Garden this week. I didn't get tickets yet. Would I be able to get tickets cheaper if I wait till I get there?
You know, I don't know about the dynamic on that one, but if you're talking about the Cotto fight, correct?
I'm talking about the Klitschko fight.
Oh, the Klitschko fight? I've heard that they've had some problems selling tickets after the initial burst. Let's put it this way. You getting a seat this weekend, one way or the other, I do not believe will be a problem based on what I've been told.
Okay. Because I looked online, and the cheapest one was $100. And I was thinking, if I'm going to spend that much there, I'm probably going to be able to get that ticket down there.
Yes, I would say you will. It's a big room. That Garden has, 18,000. And I heard after initial, they came out of the gate really fast with tickets, and they priced them kind of high, though. And that kind of leveled off the momentum. I do believe there'll be a walk-up, but let's put it this way. You'll be able to get a ticket.
Okay. One more thing. Who do you guys have if the super fight between Marco Huck and Roy Jones comes off?
Okay, that's a new definition of a super fight. I will take Marco Huck. I think you will be served.
That's all I got. Thanks a lot, guys.
Super fight. I'd take Marco Huck to put Roy Jones into a stupor.
Gabe, let's keep the calls going.
All right. Dan, did he take that off the air? All right. 517, you are live on the next round.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? This is Marcus in Michigan.
Oh, what's going on? Hey.
Hey.
Hard work, dedication, and get your seats now while they last to May 2nd.
Hey, it's better than hard work medication.
Oh, whoa, hey, no insinuations. Come on.
But I gotta stop listening to you, Steve, man. Keep disappointing me, man.
What happened?
Keep disappointing me. I look forward to going to Cincinnati for a Broner fight. All this talk about Khan, Danny, you're giving me Rancis and Judah. What's going on, man?
Well, again, the PBC, they're just going to give you nothing but the best fights. And I've heard some of the other names for Adrian Broner, and it was just one big groan fest. Let's just put it that way.
Man, I was looking forward to that, too. I still might end up being out there. Just something to do. It's like I might end up getting on that one iota for this Chicago. do something, you know, because I don't get nothing out here in Michigan besides, you know, Antonio Gates. I've been there once, and it's not too bad. But yeah, man, I was so thrilled to see Chavez on his butt this weekend, man.
I don't think that there's been a victory that people have enjoyed. And it wasn't the fact that they're great Fonfara fights, but I think to a lot of people, Chavez was very symbolic of what is wrong with boxing in certain segments or certain aspects, and it truly was a comeuppance.
Hey, the closest we had to being this happy would probably be Broner, right?
Here's the thing, though. I think Broner has a lot more talent, though, than Chavez.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm talking about people being happy about somebody.
Yeah.
Losing, what I'm talking about.
I don't disagree.
Oh, yeah. There was a little more joy with Broner, but I don't know. Yeah, I actually kind of felt bad for Chavez Jr. When he hit the canvas, I was like, oh, man, like, it's about to get terrible, and it just got awful for him. People throwing beer at him. I mean, he didn't, you know, kill anybody. He didn't kill his dad.
Gabe, he only killed his career. Yeah, but he didn't really kill anybody, just his own marketability. Yeah, you're right.
Just himself. I don't know. Yeah, it was brutal, man. Boxing fans, it's I think, possibly the toughest fight, toughest sport to lose in.
So LaMarcus, what is it today? Shoulder day, leg day, working chest or cardio?
Man, it's I ain't been to the gym for a weekday because I've been working on this school too dang much.
Oh, okay.
Real,
so you've been,
man,
exercising your mind. Very nice,
yes,
LaMarcus.
Exercising my mind too much, man. Hey, thank you for that Bob Arum interview too, or whatever.
Oh, Anytime. Just doing my job.
That's
what I do.
And one more thing. One more thing for that birthday shout-out, man.
Hey, anytime.
That.
You know what? I would get you tickets for Mayweather Pacquiao for your birthday, but they're not on sale, though, Marcus. Sorry.
I was counting on you, too.
I know. I was counting on me also.
All right, go ahead with your night, fellas, man.
All right, LaMarcus. You have a great time. Monday night. Gabe, we could probably fit in another call or two.
All right. Now, they're not out yet either, but I know a guy that can get you a great price on credentials.
Yeah.
602, you're live on the next round. 602? You've been down this road
before.
We're
0 for 2 there.
A couple of them. Yeah, they're never there. They're never there. Here's another 602. You're live on the next round.
Jay, what's up, guys? I thought that was me you just hang up on.
Oh, okay. What's going on? We got a few minutes here.
Hey, real quick question for you, Steve. If Al so dead set on getting PBC belts, why do you think he put up so much money for the purse bid for the Darrell DeGale fight?
You know, that's a very good question. But see, I think what they're doing early on, in that particular situation, they wanted home canvas advantage. They did not want to go to the UK. And number two, for the PBC to have any legitimacy, they still have to win the real belts before they do the Riddick Bowe and dump them in the trash can. Because you look at a guy like Deontay Wilder, he won the WBC, now he calls himself a champion. And all the rest of the PBC guys, the ones that have won the world titles, whether or not that they are acknowledged and recognized in the PBC galaxy, the IBF, BA, BF, BO belts have given them legitimacy. So there's going to be a time when I think these guys just dump the belts, but they have to win them first for certain purposes.
Very true. That makes sense. And then my last question is, when do you think we're going to start seeing Verdejo on HBO? How many fights away do you think he
June 13th. He gets out clean this Saturday. I believe he'll be fighting Ivan Nahada, who's 16-0 out of San Antonio. And I think the Express will be well on its way and rolling by that time.
All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate it, man. You guys keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Gabe, let's take one more call here.
Let's see if I got one. 805, have we had you already on? We did have that on.
No.
Let's see.
I heard somebody.
Actually, there you go.
Hey, what's up, Steve and Gabe? How you doing?
Good. You're our last caller. Wrap it up for us.
Sounds good. This is Chris up in Ventura. A little late to the party today on the podcast, but did you guys touch base on the Ali Santana fight? Who you're picking for that?
You know what? I am going to go with the chalk, but I think Santana is going to have some moments because Ali, to me, does not have the strongest set of whiskers. I think Santana loses a decision, but I think he has a moment or two.
Gotcha. And how do you feel, Gabe?
I'm going late stoppage with Ali. I just think he's kind of streaking here. People don't really think of him as a power puncher, but I think he's got nice speed, and he knows how to make that power sneaky and kind of catch you with something you're not really quite ready for. I just like where he's at right now in terms of his confidence. I think he kind of puts it on him, on Santana, and possibly gets him out in the last quarter of the fight.
Excellent. I love it. I'm a bit of a homer up here in the 805, but I'm taking the upset special. I've watched Santana come up hard. He's coming up hard. He's had a lot of tough fights. I mean, this is the only guy that's given Julian Williams any trouble in his pro career. A lot of people don't even remember that fight, but he did a draw with him, and a lot of people that were there thought he won it, and that's early in the guy's career. I mean, he's really proved himself. I think this has the makings of a real exciting fight. Even if Santana doesn't pull it off, I think we're in for a good one.
I agree with you. Listen, I think Santana has a legitimate puncher's chance. He's streaking, and he's on an 11-fight winning streak. He's been on national TV. He's made some statements. He beat Eddie E-Boy Gomez as the road fighter in New York. This guy is dangerous. Mm-hmm. And you know what? With a couple of losses already on his career, guys like that are forged from it. They become better fighters for it. And this 22-3 record has a lot of substance. I'm very much looking forward to this co-feature here.
Yeah, I think it's going to steal the show. I think it's going to be something else. I'm really excited
Absolutely.
For it.
So, Chris, thank you for calling.
Hey, last but not least, guys, a serious question. How soon will it be before Joe Goosen actually shows up in a full Evel Knievel jumper in the corner?
You know, Gabe, he did not look right without that denim jacket. I got to be honest with you.
I think the denim has been working for him for a while, and he comes out in the white jumpsuit. I don't know what the over-under is. 6 years, I'll just say.
I'll take that, Gabe. Solid pick. Hey, great weekend, guys. Keep up the good work. Always appreciate it.
Hey, here's my prediction. He quits that J.C. Chavez corner jacket like J.C. Chavez quit. Anyway, that's it for this edition of the Next Round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network, which is brought to you by the Iron Gym. Call them at 818-322-4627. Once again, the Iron Gym at 818-322-4627. So on behalf of Gabriel Montoya, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round. Goodbye, everybody.